This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by Manchester United legend, Paul Parker, and Talk of the Devils social media manager, Dave Murphy, to talk over the last couple of weeks at United. The last time you saw this podcast, it was Dave hosting, making multiple jokes at my expense, and Paul laughing along with them. And I joined in the comments. I was here.
I was just respecting my host. That's all I was doing.
And to be fair, we have a lot of material, so you know you can't
Yeah, you do. How are you doing, Paul? You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Not bad at all.
Good. And Devo, how are we doing?
All good. I'm glad to be out of the hot seat. You know, the pressure, the phone calls, the media requests. You know, I'm glad all that's gone now that I'm out of the hot seat.
Yeah, my phone is extremely cold this morning. Hasn't rung once. hasn't posted with a single message. Actually, that's not true. I posted a thread on Twitter last night about the goal, Garnacho's goal, and it's blown up a little bit. It's kind of funny. I put a list of great goals, seismic goals in United history, kind of goals that if they were a great player, and it was a great moment, and it had something which elevated everything. I tried to include that moment on the list. I inevitably missed a few. I was sort of like rushing it through just to post it, really. I had a lot of people sort of saying, oh, you missed this one, you missed that one. But that's part of the fun of the conversation, right? You know, I definitely missed a lot. Missed Norman Whiteside's goal in the 1985 Cup final. I've just missed Paul Scholes off the list completely, which is unforgivable. Considering the number of goals that he scored. But he had a few people that say, oh, you missed this Rooney one, you missed that Ronaldo one. The point was to find the moment of one player, really, and sort of like use that as the definition point, because that's the point with the Garnacho goal, is that I can't imagine, maybe there will be, it's just such a high bar. I don't mean this as a criticism. When you've done something that's that extraordinary, like David Beckham, really, like, you always go back to 96, and that goal from the halfway line, and he did some incredible things after it, but it was so different, so extravagant, and it launched a star, and we've been waiting for that moment from Garnacho, and maybe there will be more moments of inconsistency and frustration, but it's difficult to see how you take him out of the side after something like that. Anyway, we'll get into that. If you're watching live on YouTube, feel free to subscribe, like, get your comments and questions in if you're watching. If you're watching the replay as well, do comment and reply. We reply to the comments. I mean, if you're listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on as well. Johnny jumps in the comments, says, morning, gents. Catching this late, what have I missed? Well, you haven't joined us late. We're 3 minutes in, John, and all you've missed is me rambling for 3 minutes. No one's got a word in yet. What have I missed? Garnacho's is the best goal I've seen for this club. I'm 45 years old, so I've seen a few. I'm roughly the same age. Dave's a few years older than us both. sorry about that. you haven't missed anything. We're going to get straight into the goal now. Dan as well. I'm not going to do this. Garnacho goal versus Everton yesterday. Or Paul Parker's versus Reading in 1996. Paul Parker against Spurs in 93. Very, very good goal. But I've made enough fun at Paul on this podcast where the Reading goal is as good as it was. You don't see Trent Alexander-Arnold scoring goals like that, do you? So, C's goal the other day was all right. There's no Paul Parker against Reading. Anyway, let's talk about Garnacho's goal. A couple of minutes into the game, in fact, the whole build was smooth and nice. It was kind of like, I'm trying to think of the goals that I saw earlier. There was one of the Villa goals, wasn't it? Where Spurs just sort of like stood stationary and let Villa do it. And You might say, in some extent, that this goal was like that. I mean, you've got Lindelof's pass out to Rashford. Rashford just poses perfectly, weights the ball nicely. He had a stinker of a game, Rashford, but that moment, was fine. And Dalot's cross was perfect. And Garnacho, everything then is about him, the technique, the two steps back or two or three steps back to get himself into that body shape. And then the technique, the connection, everything. The bewilderment, I think he admitted afterwards that he didn't even realise it had gone in. He just, went with the reaction of the crowd and everything like that. And it was just instantly there's a comparison to Wayne Rooney, because you can tell straight away the technique is exactly the same. There's no denying that with no amount of retroactive analysis over the Rooney one and say it came off his shin and everything like that. The technique was exactly the same. Rooney's technique was magnificent, but it's the connection, really. It's the pureness of the connection, the purity of it, and how it flies into the top corner, which really sets this one apart as a truly, truly great goal in Manchester United history. And Paul, I think that's the place I'm going to start off with, really. It's we'll talk about the game, obviously, but you've got to talk about that moment in isolation, because it's just an incredible goal.
Yeah, only certain players can do that, and only certain players would take that on, to be perfectly honest on there. Dalot's cross was just, it was just a delivery in the box. Did Dalot set that up for him to attack it like that? No, he didn't. He just put a ball into an area. But now that ball into the area has become like an iconic ball for an iconic goal. And that's the way those kind of things work. And so when you relate that goal with Rooney, you're still talking about two completely different players at that time in their lives, to be honest, because Rooney then was the best kid around. It was simple as that. Why Garnacho is still trying to find his feet, still trying to find a regular place in the side. Does that give him a longer stint? Yes, it does. It gives him that little bit more time. And as you just mentioned, other really than the goal, there wasn't a lot in his game, really. There were still those questions still to be asked. Is he a starter or is he an impact player about him? But that goal has made a difference. In certain ways, David Beckham, when he scored his one, the Wimbledon one, David hadn't really made his mark, but that goal certainly gave him a lot to go on, didn't it, from that moment on? So maybe this could be his moment. But it's up to him to see if he takes it on. It's down to him how he goes from here. But the one thing I will say is that he's got to find his own celebration.
Yeah. He's doing the Rooney, Ronaldo one, wasn't it? We've got a couple of comments in here. Nicholas says, morning, guys. Please take some responsibility. I know the media outlet seems to be doing it. Drop an honourable mention to the king of bicycle kicks, Dimitar Berbatov. The goal against Liverpool, obviously. It's like David Beckham's goal in the 99 semi-final, isn't it? Like, no one ever talks about that one because Giggs scored that goal, and no one ever talks about the Berbatov one because of what Rooney did later in the season. But yeah, you're quite right. That in that hat-trick and in off the bar against Liverpool at the Stretford End, it's just such an amazing goal. We've got a question for you straight away, Paul, on this. Another king of the bicycle kicks who used to play with Mark Hughes, a favourite of this podcast. How many times do we eulogise about Mark Hughes on this pod? I talk about Paddy Barclay had a great line about Mark Hughes in the 80s. He said he was the most evocative player United had produced through the academy since George Best. And what he meant by that was like something fated around him. He was there for the big moments. He always had like a saying, destiny, Rotterdam, Oldham in the semi-final. Mm-hmm. But then, as was rightly pointed out to me on Twitter, he scored one for Wales against Spain. It was kind of similar. And in a way, I mean, he's fashioned that goal himself because he throws himself up to that bicycle kick. This question, Elves Parsley asks you, Paul, did Sparky used to practice those overhead kicks in training?
Not really. I mean, Sparky was one. It's like when we used to have five-a-side games. If it was five-a-sides or anything where your teams, you wouldn't want Sparky or you wouldn't want a Chucky in your team because Chucky will just do what he wanted to do. Chucky would just like pick and choose, and you have Sparky would go around like a man possessed and just give him the ball, and he would just try all the tricks in the world. Just yeah. You just wouldn't want him around, and you'll toss a ball would be tossed into the box somewhere, and Sparky would just try the most audacious things, just randomly, just try different things. Was there training sessions set up for Sparky to do what he'd done? No, Sparky was all natural ability, incredible in what he could do. And the reason why he comes up so much, Wayne, is because of maybe the way we look at it. If Manchester United had half a dozen Mark Hugheses in the side, Manchester United wouldn't be where they are now. Because the one thing they would do, that teams that may have beaten them or nicked something, they'd be be having a few bruises on them. They'll know they've had to work hard. Sparky was, he comes up because of what he was really. He was just a player. I've never come across anybody playing against him. It was horrible playing against him because you knew if he was having a bad, if he was making his game bad, he would make yours bad as well. He wouldn't make it easy. And that was against him. With him, it was good to watch what other people were getting the wax and that around him. You know, so when you talk about him and what he, I mean, I was lucky enough, I never come across him at youth football, but people talk about him at youth football and they say he was him and Norman, when they played together in that youth side, they was incredible together. You know, and Clayton Blackmore says so many things, he talks about it, because, you know, the best supporter of Sparky, his biggest idol is Clayton Blackmore.
Yeah.
Without a shadow.
Yeah, you're right. And we got a comment in there from Johnny who said he was Johnny's original and first favourite United player. So much passion, fight, and of course the amazing goals. Did he ever score a boring one? I was trying to think about this because it was asked to me on Twitter as well yesterday, and I was thinking, you know, even his tap-ins would be thumped into the net, wouldn't they? You know, he had a way of doing it.
Dave, it was his emotion after Wayne as well when he scored a goal. Remember the goal against Wimbledon?
Yeah.
The volley, wasn't it? It was a volley, I think he's it. And it's just so, it was instinctive. And it was just, and again, everything was Sparky, was done. It was textbook. Everything he struck, and you think to yourself, yeah, that's how you kick a ball. That's how you strike a ball. But you go, hold on a minute. That's not actually in the book, that style. But Sparky made things look so good as what you was just alluding to. You talked about his tap-ins. His tap-ins just did look good because of the way he'd done it, the style he'd done it, the finesse he'd done it. Sparky never done anything scruffy, really. The only scruffy things he'd done, I suppose, was maybe the grapples he got in with centre-halves.
Yeah. The goal against Sheffield Wednesday as well. I remember the Sheffield Wednesday game is that the Manchester United team that Paul played in is genuine apex, 5-0. All goals were just incredible. This one where Cantona lets it go across his body. And God, I think Paul plays a big part in the build-up for that one.
So the one you're talking about, Spark, is the one that comes over his shoulder and he's running through. And he pins it and hits the underside of the bar.
Yeah, about 35 yards out. And I always remember the commentary on it. The commentary, like, you know, obviously people, the commentators are paid and they're waiting for that moment to wax lyrical, but the commentator for that one just goes, wow, like Alan Partridge. he just like, flack, that was a goal. Dave, we can talk about Mark Hughes for another 40 minutes. I'm quite happy to do that, but we're going to talk about Garnacho's goal. Talk me through your experience of watching it and where it stands for you in terms of the great goals, because he's right up there, isn't it?
I mean, I was thinking about this last night. Where does it stand amongst the great goals? And obviously, with great goals, they have to be in two categories. One is how important the goal is. And obviously, we've had bigger and more important goals than that in the history of United. But where it stands in the greatest goals that we've ever scored, it's up there in the top three. Has to be. We're lucky as a club that we could have a list as long as your arm of absolutely amazing goals. But that's been coming, you know, that's been coming from Garnacho, I believe, for a while now. I've been I've been championing for him to start. I think he deserves more starts. I think that's the only way we're going to get the best out of him. And I think you hit the nail on the head last night on Twitter when you said there's moments in a player's career that kind of, you know, kickstarts it, turbocharges it. And we've seen that down the years with a lot of our players. I think this could be the moment, because for the rest of the game, Everton were terrified of him. They really were. They just kicked themselves. And I haven't seen a lot of that from the opposition on Garnaccio, because I don't think they deemed him as much of a threat. And that's justifiable, because he hasn't really set the world alight. But I think on Sunday that goal could be the platform where his career really kicks off. I think we're a much more balanced side when he plays on the left and Rashford's not on the left. Even though Rashford didn't have the greatest of games, I do believe he played a lot better than he's played in recent weeks. And maybe he's starting to kick on as well. I mean, that weighted pass at Dalot was absolutely fantastic. There was a few other things I was happy with for Rashford yesterday. I'm one of his biggest critics at the moment. But the goal itself, right up there with Wayne Rooney's and right up there with Giggsy's against Arsenal. That goal will go down in history. I mean, I said it last night, it's the goal of the decade, not the season. You're not going to get a better goal than that. You're really not. We could spend half the show talking about Sparky's goals, but that was just unbelievable. It really took me. I couldn't believe it when it went in, because it was that moment of what the. It stuns you, to be honest, because if we're being honest, I'm not so sure Dalot, I don't think the cross was the best. I think it was behind him. And that makes it even better, because it wasn't a pinpoint cross, you know, and to adjust his body and to be, yeah. And let's not forget, you know, he scored it against England's number one, who didn't even have a chance because it was top corner. Yeah, it's I've been trying to put into words what that was yesterday, but for me, top three without a doubt in United's history as greatest goals.
It's just it's also made a lot better by the fact that you win. If you don't win the game of football, then you're thinking about it very differently, like, oh, great goal, but you're grumbling afterwards, because to be fair for most of that first half, it looked like we might be grumbling this morning, but we're not, because early on in the second half, having not played particularly well after scoring the goal, United get a goal. It's a disputed penalty. A disputed in the fact that it was firstly awarded as a yellow card for a dive at Martial. And then it goes to VAR and they check it. And Young's left his foot out. And, you know, I know from talking to you both that you've got different views on it. Dave, you think it's a cast iron. And Paul, you're not. I mean, I was of your camp, really, but felt like, I think it was a penalty, but I think he definitely played for it. Martial, yeah, I don't think he was going to get the ball, but Young is committed, and that's, you know, it is what it is. But then that changes the game completely, because United get that second goal. Bruno gives the ball to Rashford, which is a decent thing to do. Rashford, I'm still panicking, thinking, God, a play along confidence like this, could go very badly. And it didn't. And then Bruno, obviously, very good assist for Martial to score the third. United, I don't even mentioned Kobbie Mainoo yet, which maybe we'll give him his own separate part. Paul, in terms of the 3-0 win, what did you make of everything that happened after that Garnaccio goal?
I would just say that it was always going to be a difficult game because of, first and foremost, is Everton's situation. All it was before the kickoff, all the talk was about. No one really talked about the game. And, a lot wasn't mentioned. That was a big game for United to go to Goodison, because on the last few occasions, it's been poor, poor and poor. I think that's all it's been at Goodison. You know, I still remember, you know, the 4-0 with Oli, last game of the season.
Yeah.
And things, and it's been made very difficult. And Everton, in a way, yes, they showed their feelings towards what has happened to them. I think that took away that hatred every time United have gone there. That side of it, in my opinion, wasn't there. That fire in the belly with the fans, which they give to the players on the park. And to get that goal so early from Garnacho, that made a difference. And then to keep that lead, and then the second one, was the one that broke the camel. There was no way back from after that, because to go to Goodison and score three goals, it's a rarity. Not many teams go there and actually do that to Everton. You know, you look at most games of Everton, you generally normally get no more than two goals in the game. They don't give a lot away. They're never going to score a lot of goals. So to go there in this current climate for United, for me, it's a great result to go and do that, to go and score three goals before a Champions League game. I think it's important. A good performance would have been better, but at the moment, with everything that's going against United, it's what's happening on the pitch, what's being said by everybody, and then you look at their position in the league, and you look at everything, you turn around and say to yourself, well, things aren't that bad on paper. It's just that bit underneath where you look at the club as it is, and you say that's the only thing that's wrong, really, is where the club is at this moment in time and the performances on the pitch. And I'm just fed up of hearing everybody being an expert on Manchester United and wanting to keep saying all the time, oh, they've got to get rid of the manager. I still can't get that in my head. Why would they go and do that? And what the circumstances he's had to work under and what he's managed to get out of it. At this moment in time, you couldn't get a better manager for what he's having to do with what's on his back at this moment in time. He isn't managing a side that sits mid-table or is always fighting relegation. He's fighting with the biggest club in the world, with all that goes with it and what you have to do. And at this moment in time, the club are in contention, points-wise, to maybe still win a league. Even though we know in us they're not good enough to go and do it, they're still in contention to win a league, and they're 100% in with a chance of getting into the Champions League again. So there isn't a real problem that side. I just think the people who are invested in it are really the ones that are not really being talked to or being allowed to speak. It's other people speaking on behalf of Manchester United, and it's doom and gloom. Problems with players all the time. And when all those, they shouldn't be out there because the club are in such a good position league-wise.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're quite right. I think I was looking at this, and I think it's three goals is the biggest margin that United have had at Goodison. There's a couple of times they've scored four, but I think they were 4-1 and 4-2. So a three-goal win at Goodison is as good as United have ever managed there. And maybe Everton were, I mean, you could see them confidence hit after that second goal. It was kind of like, oh, God, the heads went down and United capitalised by scoring a third. And that just, you know, really did sort of put the gloss on the thing for United. A couple of comments in before I come to you, Dave. Nicholas says, is VAR allowed to hand out second yellows? In my opinion, Young should have had it, but not sure the rules allow it. I'm not entirely sure, and I think that there's that grey area if there's bookings on penalties, but if it's the denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, but it gets pulled back because the goal-scoring opportunity is still there and he scores the goal. I'm not entirely sure on that. I actually thought less about the foul and more about the complaining afterwards that Young put himself at risk because he didn't shut up after, and he got taken off eventually. Patrick says, morning all, perhaps I'm a Grinch. I thought it was poor leadership to give Rashford the penalty at that stage. We're already 2-0 or 3-0 up. And fine, if we're being ruthless, Bruno should have taken it. If he's a designated penalty taker, it's a big risk in my view. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think Bruno, the things that we expect from a traditional captain, we don't really get from Bruno. Maybe it's an interesting psychological thing to see how captains behave from different countries. United don't have generally always had a British captain. Well, usually had a British captain.
Wayne, it wouldn't surprise me if that had already been talked about, to be fair. I don't think Bruno would have straight away would have that happened. That happened too quickly to just for him to go, oh, you can take it. And we got to look at Bruno.
There was no discussion.
That was pre-planned, in my opinion, just because everything we've seen about Bruno, we know the way how reactive he is.
Yeah.
I would say that was pre-planned, that if there's a penalty, he's mostly asked already, can I have that? Because I need a goal.
Yeah.
That's my opinion,
and he did it, and we. I don't think it's a considering he scored it. I don't think it's a massive talking point. If he missed it, it might be a different one. Patrick says, I agree with Mr. Parker. Some of the anti-Ten Hag dribble is ridiculous. One of the things I miss about Fergie is the banning of certain journalists for looking for a problem, i.e. Varane not starting recently. Yeah, good point. Ten Hag's definitely had the critics. And to be fair, I know Paul just said there, Dave, about United being in contention now and a couple of weeks ago with the I always look at it from this point of view with a complete compliment. I can see United challenging in any game, really. I can, but then when they don't, when we miss two or three players, even two or three, the drop off is so significant that we can struggle to contain any team in the league. It's where the drop off is so significant, really. But the one thing that has encouraged me in the last couple of weeks is we were hoping, and one of the things we said on one of the podcasts was, with this mess of injuries, Ten Hag needs to start finding solutions. And I mean, he kind of is, at least, like Maguire stepped up a little bit. Lindelof was fine yesterday. I didn't think there was a problem. Dalot was a lot better yesterday than what he has been before the international break. McTominay, you generally only mention him when he's played poorly because it's so obvious that he played poorly, but he did a decent, quiet job yesterday. I didn't think Rashford played as well as you thought he did, but he scored and was pivotal in one of the goals. So all the things that could have gone wrong didn't go wrong for United. And I guess that lends to the idea of a couple of players coming back, like Shaw provides more balance on the left. And that's a big difference to everyone's game. And Mainoo, who we still haven't talked about, but we will. All these things. And by the way, giving Mainoo his debut at Goodison, a ground where we've crumbled many times. Big call by Ten Hag. Bigger performance by Mainoo for that. But yeah, Dave, goal aside, what do you reckon about what do you reckon about the performance yesterday?
I mean, it was Everton getting the 10 points deduction wasn't a benefit to Manchester United at all. If anything, it was going to make the game even harder. I was concerned going into that game because Everton away is always difficult. And then the 10-point deduction worked in their favour because, Paul hit the nail on the head there when he said that the crowd were very subdued against Manchester United and more focused on letting the Premier League know. And I think that had a massive, massive part to play in that game yesterday because Fergie has even said in the past, there was times where he wouldn't even play Rooney because it was so hostile at Goodison. So going there was always going to be difficult, but I never thought of it that way until Paul said that, the crowd was just not focused on Manchester United, which was a benefit to us. We obviously started with a fantastic goal. And then for me, it was the, and I've been very critical of this player, for the past few months, but it was the Onana show. I mean, we haven't mentioned him yet, but he, in the first half yesterday, he was absolutely fantastic. I still think every now and then there's a blunder in him still, but he was absolutely fantastic. He kept it at 1-0. Having Luke Shaw back was, you could just see the instant improvement in that team. Like you said, it's a more balanced side. That left side was just more secure. There was just more freedom up and down that wing. But I think going to Goodison is always going to be a tough game. But winning 3-0, I never thought that at the start of the game that would happen. I thought we'd get away with a draw. But the Bruno situation, I know Patrick said that, it was poor leadership. I actually think it was the opposite. I really do. I think it's great leadership that a captain can see a player that's struggling. And I do believe that it was pre-planned. I obviously think that, Bruno thought, well, hopefully we'll be two or three goals up if this happens, and it's not going to be 0-0 in the last minute and having to give Rashford a penalty. Because when he gave him the ball, I'm not sure what he's seen, but the camera panned to Fletcher and Ten Hag in the crowd, and you could actually see both of them basically saying, what the hell is he doing? I mean, what's going on here? So I think it was fantastic leadership from a captain. It's a 50-50 chance, isn't it? And that's what Bruno is all about, taking chances, constantly taking chances. And yesterday it worked for the better. It was an absolutely fantastic penalty, though. I mean, top corner. Brilliant it was. Confidence, is must be down on the ground at this page for Rashford to step up 1-0, because you know you miss a penalty and it just gives your team, you know, a G up then and the opportunity then, and they get one up on you because they'll start kicking on from that. But I thought it was, you know, I know everyone has their opinion about it, but for me, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic decision by Fernandes. Now, we're sitting here the day after and we've scored. Would I have had a different opinion if we'd missed it? I mean, probably not, because I think he made the right decision. What else can you do to try and get a goal scorer to score? Give him the best opportunity, and the best opportunity is a penalty, right? So, for me, I think it was great leadership. I think in the end, we were worth the 3-0. I've seen a few commentators saying that didn't reflect the scoreline. It really did, because, you know, Everton had some chances in the first half, and Onana was, you know, was pretty good in the first half. But I think in the second half, we were a much better team. We were much more organised, and there was a nice flow to it. And, you know, we got the biggest game of our season coming up midweek, and as Mr. Parker has said many times before, you know, Fergie's big thing was a big performance before the big game. And I think we got that yesterday. We got that big performance, and I'm fairly confident going into midweek against Galatasaray. I really am.
Let's talk about Kobbie Mainoo. Just absolutely magnificent performance, especially for a debut. I was trying to rack my brains if I've seen a better midfield display for United this season. I don't think I have. I don't think I've seen one all year, really. Casemiro's an obvious choice of... So he was brilliant in the Carling Cup game. Carling Cup, oh my God. Carabao thingy, my Bob, against Palace. Casemiro was, but that was a very weak Palace side, and the conditions for that compared to what we saw yesterday for Mainoo. Paul, you and I have talked multiple times, firstly about Mainoo, but obviously about the other players as well, like Garnacho and other players like Dangor and Hannibal, and to their temperament. I mean, Hannibal's a good example of someone that Ten Hag appears to have used quite well, in that, you know, he's obviously made an impact, but he doesn't seem quite ready, and we're still sort of, the jury's out on whether he's got the temperament to basically play like what Mainoo did yesterday, which was to anchor that midfield responsibly, use the ball responsibly, use it wisely, always be in position, always keep the ball moving, always be progressive with it, always be responsible with what you're doing. And I guess the point is, with a young player, it's not... Because United have got hordes of talented young players. It's about temperament on an occasion. That's what you see with... That's what made the class of 92 so different. It's what's made, you know, United as a club so uniquely different. It's the temperament of the younger players, like a Fletcher and an O'Shea, to just come into a level seamlessly and play like they've been there forever. That looked like Mainoo's 30th game. They'd been some...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Training for him to do that kind of role, like he'd had a run of 6 or 7 games to prepare him to play for a hotbed atmosphere at Goodison and to take the sting out of it, because he did that in a way that I don't think any of our other midfielders are capable of doing at this moment in time. That's how impressive it was. And obviously made an impact defensively, clearing one off the line as well. I joked on Twitter that, you know, which one of the Mainoo twins are we going to give the man of the match to, because he was everywhere. How impressed were you with him, especially for his debut, but in general, how impressed were you by seeing him play in a game like that and play the way they did?
Well, he's been doing that. Oh, sorry. Is that
well, no, I'll go for Paul first. He's the pro.
I'll keep it short and sharp. I just think, they've been talking about him for ages. Everyone's always mentioned him when things haven't been right, especially in midfield, because midfield has always been a big talking point over quite a few seasons now. And it seems like the midfielders needed something like that. And Casemiro always, you know, looked like that he was going to be that one, even though everyone knew that he was only going to be for a certain amount of time. And it was about to lend a bit of time then to find someone else. And his name, Mayhew, is always the one that's come up. And he's delivered when asked for. You know, you said about, you talked then, I'm sure you was the same way about, it seemed like he'd been trained for that moment to go to Goodison, a difficult place and that. And it's not bad. It's, you're born to be able to do that way, to be calm. Sometimes some players are too calm and all you want to GM up sometimes, but it's their nature. They play where they're not phased. And that's that's what like Robbo was like, really. He was never phased. He got wound up. He got very aggressive, especially if someone had hurt one of his teammates or done something. He felt it is within his job to go and make sure that that person doesn't go and do it again, you know. And you can't find, but you can't find those kind of people. They just come around. Yeah. But it's about being able to switch it on and switch it off. And he could be that player who goes and does that, to go and do that. And like you say, for that clearance off the line, you know, you think to yourself, well, yeah. You think about a Brian Robson done that, a Roy Keane would do things like that, a Paul Ince would definitely do things like that. You know, where we're looking at now, midfield players that take them, are virtually typecasting them in positions. It's just nice to see somebody who's kind of, could, you know, is an all-rounder, to be perfectly honest. That's what the thing I liked about it. To come in and step in at Goodison, given how United have been there over the years, and what it's been like for them. And we've seen more experienced players lose their heads, get frustrated, lose you know, their inhibitions. Everything's just dissolved. He's gone and done really well. But the most important thing now is, in my opinion, is his next game. And he's got to be given that next game. Yeah, has to be given, because he knows he's played well. He'd feel it. He would have felt himself that he's played well, other than being told and seeing it online everywhere, you know. So I think now he needs that game. Is it right to play him midweek in that, out there where you're talking five times bigger than what it was at Goodison? Goodison of last season, not this season. That's the one the manager got to make his mind up, because that's enough to test any player, what they're going to go into there. So I really like what I saw. And, you know, the kid, he's going to do it. He's going to crack it without a shadow of a doubt. There's been players, and I talked about Hannibal of late. I like what he'd done during the bad periods, the Burnley game, you know, where he played really well. But he always felt that he's the one at that moment in time. But was he going to be the one after everybody gets back and the manager gets what he wants, that one to make the mark? I would say I'm not sure. And I'm still, you know, gone even lower than that now. It's going to be a tougher one for him. But I think this lad, you know, he's going to be a starter, in my opinion. Yeah. He has to be. Everyone's been talking about him. It's that opportunity. And I think the manager now, just the way things are with him, common sense says to give the youngster a run. Everyone has been batting for you as a manager. They've stood by you because you deserve that, because of the way you've handled everything. And everyone knows what the strife is in. But I think to go and do that now, you'll gain even more respect off of the real Manchester United fans, because he's doing something that Sir Alex would have done with a young player. He would have given him an opportunity. If that lad goes and grabs it, that lad has taken a place. And yeah. I've got to stop there because I'm starting to think about Gary Neville and I don't want to get emotional.
Dave, Mainoo, I mean, it's so accomplished as a debut. And I think that one of the things that is lost, and we haven't really talked about it because United did win fairly comfortably. You've touched on it a couple of times about, you know, the good spell that Everton had in the first half. But the thing that really shone through about that is that Mainoo was the composing influence. He was the one who calmed everything down. And when he got the ball, it's kind of like, all right, what do we do to move forward? He's not panicking. He's not saying we take the safe decision. You were seeing with some of the defenders, like, you do see it from time to time, like Lindelof and even Shaw was guilty of it. They'll just hoof the ball directionlessly. If they're in a bit of a panic, they'll just get it out and sort of reorganise. Mainoo wasn't like that. He's like, and you and I have grown up with players like Paul and Dennis Irwin, who, you know, defenders who don't get flustered in those kind of scenarios, spoiled. It's the reason why they're some of the greatest defenders to play. So I'm not criticising Sean Lindelof for that. What I'm doing is praising Maynou and his temperament by what he was able to do in there. Because now you're looking at him and thinking, all right, there's definitely an argument for Casemiro coming back in. I know some people are saying that he's on the scrap heap, but he's too established to not give him another run of games. Obviously, he's going to be given that run of games. Maynou seems like the perfect player to play alongside him because he can do some of the things that Casemiro does, maybe not to the extreme world-class level, but all the parts are there, really, and everything that he does in a way, and he's probably, well, there's no probably about it, it's definitely, he's more mobile than Casemiro currently is. So he's almost like a perfect foil for him. So Mount, Eriksen, probably some other players that I'm thinking of, will probably just have to sit and wait and let this guy have a chance, because, I mean, it's, you want to get carried away with the goal that Garnacho scored, but you also want to get carried away with what Maynou did, because we knew that he was in him. We knew that he had the talent, but to actually see it go out there, you know, like to play and dominate a game like that and really get United through that period where they needed to get to that second goal, that was all down to Maynou's calm and influence, really, and his ability to progress the play and calm it down, his responsible use of the ball and everything like that. What did you make of him, and what do you reckon to Paul? I mean, I'm in complete agreement that he's, I would say, the first, maybe not every single game, yeah, Galatasaray, maybe take him out of that one, but he'll be playing games in that first team picture for the rest of the season. He's got to be in that starting picture now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be a hard argument to say that you know, the greatest debut I've seen, I think most United fans have probably seen, is Wayne Rooney's debut. But that debut yesterday was right up there. It really was, in terms of going from, you know, Rooney came from a Premier League team to a Premier League team. He was already being tipped for the top, you know, obviously after that goal against Arsenal. But I've seen Maynou enough times in the reserves and the U teams to know that this guy is going to be something special. And the reason I say that is that when I've seen him in preseason as well, and we know preseason can not really tell you a lot, but I thought he was very, very impressive in preseason before he got injured. But the point I'm going to try and make is that, hopefully it comes across, is that when I watched him in the reserves team, the calmness of him is just unbelievable. He just calms everything down. He doesn't get fazed. He's good in the tackle. His awareness of where people are around him is just phenomenal. You know, everything on the half turn, he's just... But to take that type of performance and then take that step up to the Premier League, away to Everton, and still play as if he's playing in the reserves, if that makes sense. Because to him, it didn't... And I don't know why, to him it didn't look like it was a step up, if that made sense. It just looked like he was there, he was born to be there, and he's been there for a long time. And that was the biggest thing for me. And I was gutted when he was taken off after 70 minutes. Absolutely gutted. I'm like, no. This is what I paid my Sky Sports subscription for. Put him back on. Get him back on. Now I get it. 70 minutes into your debut, everything, game looked like it was won. I understand that. But I was disappointed. And I'm not, lately I haven't been disappointed when we've taken players off. I'm like, Jesus, that's 20 minutes too late. But he was absolutely phenomenal yesterday. And I think, you know, it would be an injustice to him to not play him against Galatasaray. I mean, later on we're going to talk about, you know, Paul's experience at Galatasaray, where there was a little bit of a tiff or a little argument that went on that day. I, you know, obviously that stadium is an absolute nightmare. Every time you see them in European games, it must be frightening for players. Players can buckle under. I just don't think that this kid would buckle under. You know, I really don't. And maybe it was in Ten Hag's mind that, you know, Everton away is a very, very hostile atmosphere. This is the preparation for Galatasaray away. If I'm being honest, if he's going to take him out of one of the games, I would do it against Newcastle. I really would. This game on midweek is our biggest game of the season. It's a game we have to win. some of the more established players in the team won't give us any more than what Mainu could possibly give us. They'll give us less. I mean, even if he does kind of like freeze a little bit on the night, I still think that he's going to be better than anyone else that we put in there. Because his calmness yesterday in the ball, his crunching into tackles, and then obviously that clearance off the line. I think I got yesterday what I expected to get from him, because I have such high praise for him. You know, I really do. I was gutted when he got injured against Real Madrid. I really was. I was hoping that, okay, I hope this isn't the end, because some players have an opportunity, they have a window. But obviously Ten Hag sees a lot more of them than we do in training. And it was an absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal debut. If it's at home against, and no disrespect to home against, I don't know, Bournemouth, you're kind of going, well, you know, it was a good performance, but it was away to Everton. And as Paul rightly said, it's not often we go there and win a game, let alone be so good to win that game. I know there was moments when Everton played well, but for me, right up there with Rooney's. Rooney still is my debut ever. You know, 3 goals, Champions League. That for me, well, I don't think would ever be beaten. But Mainu was close there. We got a lot of close this weekend. And ironically, both of them are in relation to Wayne Rooney. You know, the goal and then the debut. You know, two different players. We focus back to the same player, Wayne Rooney. But for me, I think his debut was absolutely phenomenal. It was just, like I said, it was his calmness on the ball. It was just like everything just seemed to slow down when he got the ball. You know, yeah. And he was absolutely, I'd say the Everton fans and the Everton players are more than happy to see him go off after 70 minutes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The third part in the Wayne Rooney connection was the fact that it was at Everton. But I'll let you off not being a stato as much as a nerd as much as I am with that. But yeah, I mean, it was just the thing that you both really commented on, which is the thing about every great player is that the game moves to their pace. And for a player like to do that on his debut is just mental, really. It really is. So looking forward to seeing more of him. Paul, you stopped talking earlier because of the power of nostalgia. But we are going to take you back to Galatasaray in 1993. United go there this week needing to win to stay in the Champions League. It looks very remote chance of doing that. You had to win to stay in the European Cup, and that didn't happen because of Galatasaray players rolling around from the first minute and wasting time, but also because of the incredible atmosphere, the fans being in the stadium 6 hours before kickoff. One of the most notorious trips in games, away games in United history, let alone European history. Say Galatasaray, everyone thing. We played there in 94. It was 94, 95 we played there as well, but it's still not quite 1993. And that old stadium's been knocked down and they've got a new stadium now, but the atmosphere's still pretty mad in there. It might not be quite as crackers, but it's going to be quite intimidating. I guess in a two-part summary, your memories of that one and how you think United will fare on Wednesday.
Well, that one, I mean, the memories just start from the moment the plane landed, really. It was just crazy. It's just like virtually the airport decided that, you know, that everyone could try and get as many people into the airport as possible to abuse people coming on a flight from Manchester. And can they bring placards and bedsheets with threatening words on it? Sing songs to threaten teams, but smile as you're doing it. It was an incredible occasion, and the boss kind of teed us all up for it, and we got what we got, maybe a lot more than what we was expecting, but we arrived and it was quite ferocious. I mean, went to this lovely hotel just on the river, can't remember the name of it, but it's the one that splits Europe and Asia, and we stayed there. Everything was wonderful, the staff were lovely to us. The day of the game, it seemed like somebody took away their happy pills and they decided to be aggressive and nasty. The people who were in the little foyer areas who were shining shoes and that, if any of us had decided to have our shoes shined, they would have put acid mostly on the rags, dragged that across your toes, saying, we shine your boots, but they weren't. They were taking your toes off with acid. He got very nasty. And the moment we arrived, and as you mentioned, the singing and all that before, and we went on the pitch before before just to have a look at the stadium. And we went up and all of a sudden you could just see people in there already. And when I say people, 80% of the clubs in this country would want a crowd like that just to watch a game, not just to be in there that many hours before the game singing songs. And we went and it was quadraphonic. It was just from there and then it went to there. And it was something that I keep doing that to people. And I think people think I'm talking rubbish, but it was just an incredible atmosphere before we even started. And once we got out on that pitch, as you said, you know, you breathed and a player fell down in front of you. The ref stopped the game. And then he got up and got to his feet. And then you went somewhere else and you breathed again and another player. The game never got going. It's like watching games today, by the way. Virtually, there must have been that. Any player breathes on you, you are allowed to go down. And it was. I mean, if you're talking 90 minutes of football, a game's 90 minutes, there would have been less than 45 minutes of the ball in play. They just played the game out and they was happy just to stop us going through. And it's still classed as their great, they still class it as their greatest night, coming to greatest night. But now that might have changed a bit because they've come to Old Trafford and won. Then to get the opportunity now to do a double over United to be something, it's incredible. I mean, I went across there and I've done some filming there. When the draw was made, they made a draw and I was asked to go and do some filming. I'm trying to think when I done it, about January, February of this year, for a programme on BT Sport about it. And we went around, we went to where the hotel we stayed in. And it was quite, just to chat. And I was chatting then to their, to the player who was the captain as well. It was me and him doing it together. And what he was just telling me, everything was good about that game. It was about to stop this, to stop that. And we have to remember, they had some talented players. Two Guy was one of them, a young Two Guy, who was a horrible brat, horrible. Everything about him was spoiled, horrible, arrogant. But he was a great player, and you need that to be a great player, especially the arrogant side, because you have to believe in yourself. There's a margin in arrogance that you need to be a great player. And Two Guy proved that evening, and he proved it, and how good a player he was when he came here and played for Blackburn Rovers and was talented. But it was a horrible, horrible night of a non-football night, and we go out of the Champions League, and it was a horrible feeling after that. What went on with Eric and then the police virtually just left us on our own, going down to the changing rooms. We was going down concrete steps and the police are trying to hit us, trying to get out the ground, grabbed all our gear, didn't even bother, showers, just get straight to the airport. Left us on the runway on the coach, everyone laughing at us in the airport. It was their night and they ruined it. They absolutely were going to ruin it for Manchester United. Done it on the field, they were going to do it as we're leaving the country. And it's been going on for years. I've got an old school friend who lives out there. Lives in a place called Bodrum, I think it's called. And they, you know, they go and watch Galatasaray. They're Galatasaray fans. But they go and they become Galatasaray. They love the atmosphere. And they become, you know, they call them Gala. That's what they say. And absolutely love going there because the atmosphere. But, you know, they're going mad because everything about beating Manchester United at Old Trafford was the biggest news for years and years. To go and do it again, those players are going to have to go through that again. So the manager is going to have to rethink about what he does again, you know, to make sure he's got the right players who can handle that, because you do need cool heads. We didn't have that night. Eric lost his way when he went out there, and that was down to Eric. Eric hated losing. He couldn't stand losing. We all hate to lose, but no one more than Eric. He had that little bit more, that edge about. He just hated it. Because he couldn't do what he wanted to do because the ref wasn't helping us. The ref was part and parcel of what was going on. Yeah. It was terrible, some of the decisions that was coming out of his head and, you know, transferring to a whistle. So I'm hoping that United can go and score that first goal. So important, that first goal that they go there, as it was important to score the first goal against Everton to ask a question, to get it going. But if they allow Galatasaray to score that first goal, then it makes it even more difficult because the atmosphere will go up again. We've got to remember, we're talking about Galatasaray, and they'll go for 90 minutes. You know, it's not like being at the Etihad, you know, like there, where there's no great feeling that you're at somewhere big with something difficult to beat. Like, you go to Etihad, you have to beat the team. You go to Galatasaray, you have to beat the team, and you have to take on the fans as well. And the only way to take on the fans is to go and beat the team.
That's
the difference.
It's I remember that game so well, and I remember the referee blew up like right on time, right on 90. And there was at least like 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, and we're talking that people will, you know, now they put up the boards and they put up the electronic boards. There was a time when they put up just a number, didn't they? For about 2 or 3 years, and there was an electronic board that they could just change the number on. And now it's like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then you wouldn't get more than 3 or 4, and it'd just be sort of like played until the referee blew. And like 4 minutes would be an extreme amount of time. They'd usually be like between 2 and 3. In fact, usually between 1 and 2, and then 3 for like lengthy stoppages and 4. And everyone's expecting like 4 or 5 in this game. It gives you the extent of like everyone, like that's how much people were expecting to be added because of how much time would be wasted. And the referee blew on right on 90. Probably just wanting to get out of there. Yeah, and that's that's one of the things that wound Cantona up so much. And he called the referee a cheat afterwards, and he was in there. It's caused so much trouble. But this guy, the referee, was actually done for match fixing like a couple of years later. It's a great story. You can go and check it up. And it's not so great that United were eliminated. But Dave, I mean, it's not just Galatasaray. United have had... It's not worth checking to reel through them, but United have had some stinkers in Turkey. You know, I remember getting battered by Fenerbahce after, not in 96 when we won and they won Old Trafford, but they were the first team to ever win a European game at Old Trafford, away game anyway. Elvira Bolic scoring a goal that deflected over off David Mays thigh and into the net. What a load of Bolic, the newspapers said the day after, and it was really. But United, in the return from the Wayne Rooney game, they got battered out in Fenerbahce. I think it was a dead rubber, but I think we've had Galatasaray, we've played them since in the new stadium, I'm pretty sure. And we've played Bursaspor, Istanbul, when Rafa was playing for them, Başakşehir, a couple of years ago when they won out there, when one of the, was it the, when they had the corner and the goalkeeper, Henderson, was sort of left exposed and they ran and scored from that. United do not have a great record in Turkey. They need to win to keep their hopes alive in the Champions League. And I've pretty much resigned myself to the fact that we won't be in the knockout stages. And it's about whether or not they get the Europa place, which is, you know, definitely not something to take for granted as well. What are you expecting this week?
I mean, I don't think I'm expecting anything at the level of 93. I think that's just out on its own. In regard to a spectacle of how fans and hatred can spill down onto the pitch. I mean, still to this day, which is 93, it's 30 years later, I think we can all recall pretty much the whole game, you know, and the complete robbery that took place. And no surprise that a few years later, that referee gets done for bribery. It also reminds you how insane Eric Cantona is that with all that spilling down onto the pitch and the riot police and all, he still wanted to take on everyone in that stadium. You know, he wanted to take on everyone and anyone that came forward. So, I mean, that's why we loved him, you know, and not just for his football, but for the pure adrenaline that he had. And for the, as Paul said, he didn't want to lose him in any circumstances. And, you know, some players will go to a stadium like that and you may see them. You know, let's say, for instance, like a Vinnie Jones, I just went around kicking people all day long in the Premier League. You stick him out in Galatasaray, he'll wilt or he will, you know, but Eric was just insane that night. So again, one of the reasons why I love him and still love him. But I'm confident about this week. I really am. I do believe, you know, especially after that performance or that win against Everton, I think we will go there and win. The dilemma here is that, you know, are we good enough to win the Champions League if we get to the knockout stages? I've seen worse teams win it, but there's some really good teams in the Champions League this year. I know you got to be in it to win it. I don't believe we would win the Champions League. But then again, the look of the draw could help you. Anything can happen in a cup competition. We all know that. Like I said, worst teams have won it. Is our best chance of a European trophy dropping down into the Europa League? I don't know. It's more games, isn't it? We're out of the Carabao Cup. You know, if we go out of Europe, it gives us a good run at the league and the FA Cup. And I know, you know, every team goes into every competition wanting to win it. But there is certain competitions where you kind of look and go, well, I would sacrifice it. So I'm kind of wandering on here, like in a Wayne Barton way. But I do believe that, you know, I do believe we'll win it. I'll put it down to 3 minutes, though. I just don't know whether it's going to do us any good going through the knockout stage or going into the Europa League for the rest of our season. You know, there's some good teams in the Europa League. We know that. The final's here in Ireland, so I'd be happy if we got there. But I do think we will win. I do believe that, but I just don't know how much of a benefit it's going to be for us going through in the Champions League if we do go through all these. I'd rather just go out of those competitions altogether. If it's a choice between the Europa League and going out of Europe, I'd rather just go out of Europe. It gives us a better chance of getting Champions League qualification for next season. Because we can
purpose to do this again. To do you know what I mean? It's do you just go through that exact same process of losing 3 or 4 games and then go, oh, well, we qualify for this again, you know?
Yeah, no, I just think, you know, in our current situation, the way we are and with the players that we have, I don't think it's going to do us any benefits to go through to the knockout stage and get eliminated then to add more games. I really don't. I just don't think we're good enough to win the Champions League. And the Europa League's a massive distraction. It really is. You know, that Thursday night, then Sunday game, then Tuesday game, then Saturday. It's just, we spoke earlier on where you said that, you know, we lose 2 or 3 players and we're a completely different team. We're a mid-table team. We don't have the squad to challenge on all 4 fronts. We really don't, regardless of whether being away for the Champions League. So for me, I think for our league position, I think it would be more of a benefit to go out of Europe, even though that's defeatist. I still think we'll beat Galatasaray, but I just don't think in the long run it's going to do us any good. I do believe that the Champions League is our priority to get back into it. We'll have a much stronger team. We'll have a bigger squad, I do believe. I think Ten Hag, you know, it's a different season if he has a fully fit squad. It really is. You can see that. You can see as each player comes back, we're getting better and better. Martinez is back in training. I think they've super glued Varane back together again for another few weeks. Hoyland wasn't fired off playing this week. He may be available for Wednesday, and then obviously Newcastle next weekend, Saturday night. So we're not that far off. We really aren't of putting a good run together. And as Paul said earlier on, it's crazy to think that all the criticism United have been given, but we're only, you know, 4 points off towards spot. You know, that's the madness of all this. So a fully fit United squad, I think we'll climb up that table. I'm just not. I still think we'll win this weekend. This week against Galatasaray. I just don't know for the season if it's going to do us any good. So,
I think it was Fergie who said that the standard of this club should always be to get to the knockouts of the Champions League. And it's an interesting one. Do you, knowing that we're probably not likely to win it, still hope that we qualify? Obviously, you've got to think that we should want to win every single game of football. It's going to be interesting for sure to see what happens with that. I don't think we'll preview Newcastle today because we've run over an hour and the guys have given me too much of their time already. And I guess very quick summary in a Dave Murphy way, Newcastle tough, midfield tough. Maybe we'll buckle under the atmosphere, which is much the same as you could have said for previewing this game against Everton, and at least we won that. A lot to look forward to the week, and you know, the players are coming back. things are looking brighter than what they were a few weeks ago. And I was quite pessimistic after the run of some of the performances and defeats, and thinking, you know, even Champions League qualification looked way beyond us because we had too many injuries. And but then those few players come back and it does make such a profound difference. And, you know, if Menu steps up and if Garnacho is ready, then these are two players who can add electric into a team. And I mean, we've seen it before. That electric can carry a team a very, very long way. Really appreciate the guys being with me this morning. If you've watched live on YouTube or Facebook, if you can still get your comments and questions in, because we reply on the replays. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast, if you can like, subscribe, and leave a platform on leave a review on the platform you're listening on. This is my problem. If I can read my notes, and all the words come out all jumbled, like I'm trying to rush through an outro. If you leave a review on the platform you're listening on, and don't mention my mixed words, like getting it, don't mention Dave's long rambles, don't mention my long rambles, just mention good things in the review. It would help us out a lot, and we'd appreciate it. I would appreciate it anyway. Until next week, guys, we'll be back. So stay safe, stay well, and thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.